The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
My life is brilliant. My love is pure. I saw an angel, of that I'm sure. She smiled at me on the subway. She was with another man.
Hi everybody, welcome to Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm Noreen Ehrlich.
Hey everyone.
This is Kelly, that's saying hey everyone. This is Kelly, my co-host, Kelly Trepanier.
What's up?
And then, of course, we have Josh at the controls.
Welcome back.
And just by the tone of that song and coming in, you know it's going to be a more serious show today. But I hope everybody's having a great week. And Kelly and I were coming up with the show for this week. And we have infinite number of directions to go in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I torture her a bit because I'm all over the place initially.
Because we plan for one show and then it gets changed the day of.
Well, also because if you do any research on anything on the internet, you go down so many different rabbit holes that there's so many things out there. Mm-hmm. It's hard to even organize. Everything sounds important and everything sounds good.
Right, it does. But so there's one thing that Noreen and I, you know, we come in the day and we just always start talking about life events, what's going on in the news. And I'm not sure who's even coined it, if this is a universal thing that's being said, but we, you and I, had kept going the age of transparency. It really feels like we're in this time where no one can hold on to their secrets anymore, and it's just all coming to the surface.
Right. So yeah, I went to Colorado for a few days, and so I read the New York Times, and then I read the New York Times on the way back, and I read a few different magazines, and it's... And even watching the local news in Colorado, it's like there's just so many stories, each of them individually, I came up with the word disturbing, shocking, but they're exposing something that maybe on some level we understood was happening, whether it's, you know, the story of the Hollywood stars getting their kids into the schools, or whether it's what's happening in Venezuela now with WikiLeaks. I mean, they're all extraordinary stories on their own, and they're all upsetting. And then,
It's like what I was kind of saying too is that the discussions that I have with individuals, like when the college scandal came out, no one actually was surprised. When we hear of child abuse or inequality with women, no one's shocked. Like, we all kind of have understood that this has just been going on. And in a horrible way, what I do find the most shocking aspect is that we're actually not really shocked by it. So it's like, how can we see these stories? And it's like, yeah, we all just kind of knew that this has always been happening. And so it just has always led you and I into these conversations of like, well, what really is going on in the world, and are we awake? Is it a change? Sometimes I always like to say, because we're seeing these systems kind of crumble, we're seeing when banks are committing fraud, we're seeing in the church an abuse of power, both emotionally and physically, sexually abuse over these children,
financial institutions that are corrupted. We're talking about religious institutions, our healthcare institutions,
the opioid.
Like, there's every institution that ever was in place that was needed at a time when plutocracy was taking us forward has now become
a little
toxic,
outdated. Yeah, and so when I see it, though, I get excited. I'm like, I think this is a great thing. I think this is the demonstration that we're changing and evolving. And during the change, it's always uncomfortable. It's confusing. It's not linear. You don't really see the tunnel. But to me, if the system's kind of collapsing in some way, that only means something new can then come up and within it. So I like to think it's a good thing, but at the same time, it is a debate. So it's like, well, is anyone really changing? Or are we speaking up about things? Are we taking notice? Are we getting shocked and
or
motivated?
Are we just getting numb?
Yeah.
And then
and avoiding.
Also, I have a terrible habit of wanting to see the big picture, and that's very helpful for me in the work I do. And when I was the chief financial officer, you have to see the big picture and you have to be able to dive into it. But also because I think when you have the Me Too movement and you have race movements and religious movements, but at the end of the day, it really just shows that there's people in power, and then there's the people who are not in power.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can come in different divisions. That can be sex divisions, men versus women, or that can be nationalism, or that can be different religions. But at the end of the day, I think the real frustration that people have is that they are that we're, as a culture, we're starting to wake up. Maybe not everybody, but people on more of the leading edge, I would call it, are starting to really wake up to the fact that there's people in power, there's institutions in power, and there's those that are disempowered.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to understand that maybe we're under a little bit of a spell of what these institutions,
right,
including the media, including Hollywood, it's not all bad, but to the extent that it is toxic, that we're just waking up to understand that this may not be the healthiest for us.
Well, exactly. And I think it's not the abuse and the power is a huge aspect of it. But it's like I remember being young, and half the time I don't even know where I got these ideas. But I actually really liked school. I was someone that was always excited to have debates and think about, have thoughts, have my own original thought. And I realized quite early on in my life that school, that's not what school is. School is going to have these great thinkers that have created the society and created these structures and made these discoveries. All of their information just get regurgitated on us. And really, we're just going there to memorize. And that any time I wanted to ask a question or, hey, what if we thought about it in this way or go about getting to the solution in a different way, it gets just literally thrown out the window, not important, doesn't matter. And I just thought, okay, well, maybe once I get to university, then we're going to have these great schools of thoughts and we're going to be real thinkers and we're going to get out there and impact society. And I was like, oh, no, you're still just getting this outdated information and like literally textbooks with outdated information. But these systems that don't change and a government that gets to decide what's taught and what's not taught. And so to me, it's like, we're seeing the power, but also a big part of this age of transparency is that, wait, our structures are old and it is time to revamp everything. And we're beginning to take, like, the cracks are coming into the system. Well, and now the sheep are starting to look, you know, pick their heads up and think for themselves.
Right, right. You were talking about the education system and we were doing research and really just how much of it is test-based. And if your child is not absorbing the material and testing properly, right off the bat, their odds start to go down as far as what their success will be in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's individualism up to a point as long as you don't challenge the powers that be.
Yeah.
And so even when you talk about women in careers, there was an article in the New York Times, that Sunday New York Times, that maybe people read, just about, even if it's unintentional, that women and men that are educated, both highly educated, they go out into the workforce and they marry people at the same level of education generally.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the way capitalism structured, our cultures are structured to reward people who work 50 plus hours a week, only one of the two parties can work 50 plus hours a week. And so that the women who want children, I imagine the men do too, but the women will drop more generally out of the workforce, and they may even have high student debts and be overeducated, but they drop out of the workforce or limit their ability in the workforce so that men can strive. So there's a system where you're underutilizing talent, a huge pool of talent, but the system it's still out there. It's still very much out there, but it's something that somebody with some high level of thinking really needs to reconsider. And it may not, we're not wishing any collapse on anything, but that we need some new schools of thinking. And I do believe, despite hearing about Trump every day in our ears, we can't get it out of our ears. What it is forcing, on a more positive note, is we can attack Trump all we want, but mm-hmm. even if we get him out of the way, the problem is more systemic, and mm-hmm. it's really what are these institutions built on, and what could they and should they be built on here on, so that we're really supporting ourselves as a community versus some people winning and some people losing.
Yeah. I think that's a good moment here. We have an audio from Noam Chomsky, who is an American linguist philosopher. He's the founder of the field of cognitive science and is a cognitive scientist. He's a historian, political activist, and social critic. And sometimes he's referred to as the father of modern linguistics. And so I thought, hey, maybe this is a good moment because he lays the stage of kind of showing this society we have right now and how it's structured and how that affects us in media and government and politics and finances, you know, and corporations. So, Josh, why don't you play that clip now?
In manufacturing consent, that it's the primary function of the mass media in the United States to mobilize public support for the special interests that dominate the government and the private sector. What are those interests?
Well, if you want to understand the way any society works, ours or any other, the first place to look is who is in a position to make the decisions that determine the way the society functions. Societies differ, but in ours, the major decisions over what happens in the society, decisions over investment and production and distribution and so on, are in the hands of a relatively concentrated network of major corporations and conglomerates and investment firms and so on. They are also the ones who staff the major executive positions in the government, and they're the ones who own the media, and they're the ones who have to be in a position to make the decisions. They have an overwhelmingly dominant role in the way life happens, you know, what's done in the society. Within the economic system, by law and in principle, they dominate. The control over resources and the need to satisfy their interests imposes very sharp constraints on the political system and the ideological system.
Powerful. We're off?
Yep.
Okay, are we on?
Yep.
Oh, all right. Sorry, folks. We're not getting a lot of messages here.
Noreen and I were actually just talking about that clip was playing, and popped into my head how I had actually known just an average Joe. He became a cop, and his personality really did change. And frankly, he became kind of a prick and just like arrogant and like, you know, overly confident, and it was to a degree an abusive power. And you do think like, oh, well, I'm the cop. It doesn't matter if I don't put my blinkers on or follow the rules all the time because I'm the one in power. And so, I mean, it's pretty absurd. Like a select few of people having that much power over society, over the structures of, I mean, the earth and resources and who.
And resources.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, like,
really
that's
is.
Scary. It's like you really are playing this God factor, and it's no wonder that abuse starts to come in because, frankly, you'd have to be such an integrous, upright character, which isn't taught or developed, you know, right, in our society, to be able to manage that degree of power. So it's no wonder what we see going on in the world.
It's a lot of ego. And I do, when I originally came up with the terminology Defy and Hustle, it was for an event I gave mm-hmm. It was in 2018. And I opened up the event by talking about something that I termed as the shift. Mm-hmm. And it may be going slowly, you may not see it, but there is a shift that's starting to go on, which is shifting us away from a paradigm, a mm-hmm. social paradigm that's really dominated by fear, mm-hmm. into a paradigm that's dominated more by truth and authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so right now, from my understanding, because I can understand financial things, but then my brain goes towards more philosophical understandings. And I've been all around the world and I've studied a lot. My understanding is that we are going through a shift, and it's going to take us individually each learning how to master our own emotions and our own fears and mm-hmm. learn how to really see the world completely differently, something we couldn't even have comprehended years ago or decades ago. And this is, even in all this turmoil, that if we can, we can try to stay positive and catch ourselves as we start to fall in to the stories and the victimization.
Right, and the old structures. I think that's pretty fascinating to me, too, that it was like you innately could sense that and feel that. And so as you were kind of pulling together and reorganizing your teaching, I would say, like Defiant Hustle, you just fundamentally could tell that there was this paradigm shift. And I mean, there really was. Darwinism's theory of competition has been disproven. Like, it's not nature. It's not fighting each other to dominate and who wins. It's actually cooperating together. It's working in harmony. And it's been scientifically.
Yeah. At some level, well, and it works for animals.
Darwinism, he was actually wrong. Like, the trees, they're not fighting each other. Everything's communicating. The ecosystems are working in balance and harmony. And from one perspective, wait, I don't get why killing that animal, like, why that wolf's so important to kill the deer. From our level, it's like, ooh, you know, it's just survival of the fittest and who's stronger and bad luck. But then when you break it down, you realize, no, everything's intricately entwined, and that if that deer wasn't controlled, that they're going to eat all the vegetation, then it's going to ruin the rivers and they're going to start to flood out and it's going to just damage that ecosystem. So it's like everything has a way of working together. And now it has been scientifically proven that, especially in like workplaces, cooperation and working together creates the most success and a place of happiness and like positivity that people actually want to go to work and work harder.
And that's what our show is going to be about to some
extent.
Yeah, it's
coming on
next
week with Kim Cameron.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and he'll talk to us about positivity in the workplace.
And positive psychology, yep.
Before we get there, first we have to talk about toxic things that are happening in our institutions. So there's so many stories to go into, but we mm-hmm. really had to narrow it down. So why don't we introduce a story that
describe
this clip, Kelly.
We have Peter Saunders here. Peter Saunders. And he was he became the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors and Vulnerable People. So as Noreen was just saying, it's like there's so many avenues to go down to, and every time you pick up the paper, we hear scandals of what's been happening with, like, the Boy Scouts, sexual abuse. So we thought this was a good avenue to focus the show on. So right now, we'll listen to Peter Saunders.
The ringing of church bells and the sight of the Vatican are emotive reminders of a painful past for Peter Saunders.
I was abused by a family member from very, very early in my childhood, 7 or 8 years of age. And then I was abused by the head teacher at my primary school, Catholic primary school. I was then sexually assaulted by 2 Jesuit priests at my secondary school when I would have been 12, 13.
As a boy, he was brought up in a strict Catholic family in London and even considered joining the priesthood. As an adult, he kept his abuse a secret until he was 38.
I always felt a bit depressed. I always felt down. I always felt unworthy. I always felt dirty. And I never really joined the dots.
In Rome for the Vatican Sex Abuse Summit, Peter says it can only be a success if Pope Francis commits to a zero-tolerance policy.
If a priest is found guilty, that person must be excluded from and dismissed from the priesthood forever. End of story.
Okay, so we were just listening to Peter Saunders, and he's talking about abuse
in
the Roman Catholic Church.
In the church, yeah.
And he was abused?
He was.
He was abused. Mm-hmm. And so as Kelly and I were exploring these stories of toxic institutions, and we didn't want to just come in with cliche or take your power back and, you know, be strong and all these things that people tell you. But the truth is, when you're coming up against the powers that be, mm-hmm. first of all, you may go into some sense of denial about what's happening or may not even understand what's happening initially, whether that's sexual abuse or, well, in this case, we're going to talk about sexual abuse and not mm-hmm. just of women, but in men in this case. But that when you come up against the system that's mm-hmm. in place, the system is designed in such a way or has become designed in such a way that it keeps the people within it conforming to the system and mm-hmm. needy of the resources within the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, one of the one of sometimes the first questions that comes up on these topics that I hear so many of us say and have even said it myself is, what took them so long to speak out?
Right. And why didn't you speak up sooner? Why are you coming out 30 years later?
Right. And so it's like, what? And we know that it's not easy. Then we really wanted to dive in. Well, what are we actually up against when we become a whistleblower or to try and find our truth and speak our truth?
Or if you've been victimized and you do want to speak out, what happens that people are speaking out? It seems that a lot of people have gotten the comfort to speak out now, and that's the Me Too movement, and even with men and
safety
and
numbers,
abuse. But people will try to discredit the whistleblowers by saying, "Well, if that really happened, then why didn't they say something?" And the truth is, and I'm sure everybody out there has had some sort of abuse, if you want to call it that, or some sort of way that they were disrespected and they wanted to say something, but you either couldn't or
I think it's just it wanted specifically in this topic and the subject matter. It takes so much time, especially when it's happening to children, just to figure out what on earth is going on. And we were discussing this, is that this is happening through power dynamics in relationships, but this is happening from people that are either in your family, doctors, teachers,
husbands,
politicals.
Wives,
yeah. These
bosses.
Are people you innately love or trust.
Right.
And that so when it's this position where you've been trained and like taught, oh, I believe what they say, if they're doing this, you instantly start to feel like, well, maybe it is me. Maybe I have done something. Maybe I deserve this. And again, especially as a kid, you do not have the reasoning, the emotional maturity, any psychological or understanding whatsoever to be able to grapple with this. So that in and of itself takes time. But then in specific with this Peter Sanders case, he was saying in that clip how he's doing his best to make sure that there is 100% accountability. And even for like the bishops that have brushed off this like behavior that used to not be punished. So even a teacher that was abusing children at his school, when a few brave children spoke out to their parents, the parents went to the bishop, and the bishop, and this was very common to happen and still happens sometimes, just transferred the teacher. He just gets moved to another school to do the same abuse. It was just accepted in the community. It happened to some of them. This is just what happens. Take it on the chin. Let's move forward. We don't want anything to slander our good name, you know?
Right.
So that in and of itself affects the psychology of the victims, and it just makes them feel like, well, this, like, how can I change this? This is what's done. Where is my power in it? So in that avenue, it's one of the reasons it takes a while.
The victims don't come out because they have a lot at risk. If you want to really hurt a human being, take away their sense of being part of a tribe or a social grouping, take away their job. If you're going to speak out about something that's happening in, for example, the corporate environment, whether that's accounting fraud or sexual abuse, or we had Mark Whitaker on here, who's known as the informant, and he was talking about how the corporations were banding together to do price fixing. When you are going to speak out, you've got everything at risk. And many of these institutions, you get bullied. The whistleblower or the victim, is whatever word you want to use, may be bullied.
Yeah. Look, bully, but so like even when there's a story of the women at Nike who had been dealing with harassment and misogyny and just blah, blah. They had actually gone to HR and were complaining, and their complaints were just getting swept under the rug because they were from top executives. And HR was like, well, we don't want anything to cause a huge lawsuit or be damage to the company. It's like the company first and foremost. Who are you guys? Like, you're little pawns. You can just deal with this. So it's either then that can result in getting – so if the people decide I'm going to continue to push forward, I am going to stand out and say something, well, that could get a negative performance evaluation, get bad job assignments. They can get fired. And then they lose their status, their relationships, coworkers want to say, you get the scarlet letter. It's like people just kind of like, you have the plague or something. It's like, go over there. I don't want to be associated with someone that's getting attacked right now. I need to think of my own survival. And that's extremely scary. And it's a whole other degree of kind of like abuse on top of the abuse you've already been experiencing.
Well, you can see it even in our politics now where people, well, there's the silence of complicity, being in a room with somebody who may be lying or whatever else might be going on. It's very toxic in our political world right now, and it goes beyond the United States. But just to be silent when you know something's going on, is that acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's something called, I think in our political government, too, if you do speak out against what's going on, you will have your life and your family threatened because who knows what's going on there. But it's run like a mafia right now.
On that note that you just said, going into this study, so this was done by Francesca Gino. She's a behavioral psychologist, and it was written in the Harvard Business Review. And again, it's referring to these women standing up. They had done an evaluation of their women colleagues and started to do more research on the fact. So the psychologist, did this study. And one of I think it's called the bystander effect. So when a person is in trouble, others who are present in the room, just like you were saying, often fail to intervene because they assume other people will, especially if there's two others, that they'll assume maybe the other person will just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're thinking, well, it's happening in front of me. They're kind of safe, even though I know this is inappropriate, but it's not my place. I shouldn't intervene. And then the most influential aspect of this is that people won't intervene depending on how costly they think it is to
themselves. Right, what's my upside? Why should I intervene?
So in one study, participants were either alone or with a passive bystander. They witnessed an incident in which a man sexually harassed a woman. Now, in reality, these guys are just actors. They're doing this for the research. And they want to see how costly intervening was. The experimenters varied the perpetrator's physical stature. So when we're saying costly, it's like, what cost is this going to be on to me? Like, am I safe if I intervene or am I unsafe if I intervene?
Okay.
So they did two different scenarios, one where the perpetrator was a skinny white guy and the next where he was like a really tall, scary looking dude. When intervening would be less costly, i.e. the skinny white guy, it was 50% of bystanders helped out when no other one was present, and 5.9% of the participants helped out if there was another bystander. That dropped a lot just to have even another person.
5.9.
It was 50% stepped in when they were alone. There was no bystander, but that they felt safe enough to do it.
Right.
But then when there was another person in the room and the event going on, it dropped down to 5.9%. Because a lot of people just think, oh, maybe the other person's going to do it. And if they're not doing anything, I don't need to do anything.
And
they just kind of like, unconsciously talk themselves out of it.
Plus, I think it's very hard sometimes. Trust me, there's been a lot. I think any woman out there, I can't speak for other things, but in woman, being a woman, especially in financial world especially, but even on a day-to-day basis, there's plenty of things where you're not really sure what it's going at first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you need to almost come out the other side of the experience before you can digest it and understand that you were that you were abused before you speak up in the middle of it. You do have a tendency to doubt yourself. I don't know if men do this.
Well, I don't even know if
you
it's
doubt
necessarily
yourself first.
Like doubting as it is. Yeah, it's like, oh, the guy put his hand on my knee. It's like, oh, this is inappropriate, but I don't want to embarrass him. I don't want to embarrass myself.
You
like, what's actually happening? My job's really important to me. Wait a second. Now he's grabbing me. Holy crap. I'm in a really bad position. It's like that happens so often. It's incredible.
And I think that we also, and whether it's women or whether it's anybody who's disempowered, you get practice at just tolerating it. What I call in my event last year, Defiant Hustle, I call it enduring. We are a culture of people who are very good at enduring situations that we should probably no longer be enduring in the age of transparency.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about one more term that you may hear us, you're probably starting to hear it in the news, before we move on and talk again about sexual abuse and in follow that story through and watch as one gentleman starts to deal with that. But I wanted to talk about a terminology called gaslighting. Mm-hmm. And have you heard of gaslighting?
I had. You know, and I had heard of it more, I think, like in movies. And it's actually been a while since I've heard the term, and you kind of rebrought it to my reality and stage today.
Well, it's gaslighting, meaning when you come up against somebody, mm-hmm. whether that's our president, or it could be your spouse, or it could be your boss, or whoever it is, there's a... And it's based on something out of a movie, and I wish I knew more about it, but it's called gaslighting, in which, well, if you're dealing with a lot of the sociopaths out there, too, you might get it. But it's somebody who doesn't take responsibility for the narrative whatsoever.
So it's a way to manipulate so that you get the upper hand and can literally kind of trick someone into thinking that, oh, wait, this is my fault.
Right. Yeah. Questioning their own sanity.
And you do actually see this a lot with Trump, where he has literally said something. We have proof of him saying it. And then months later, even days later, he's like, I never said that. No, I don't know what you're talking about. I never said that. And he says it so often that then the other person really starts. Now, in Trump's case, it's a little different because we can have these recordings. We can watch them over and over again. But if this is just happening in your relationship and the guy's like, or the girl, no, I never said that. It never happened. Like, you're the crazy one.
Crazy.
You know, after a long time, that person can then begin to actually think, oh, wait, I am crazy.
Yeah. So it's got a 5-step process. Apparently, they take responsibility for the narrative. Even as you start to speak out, if it's domestic abuse, you start to speak out. And then your husband or wife comes in and just starts taking control. The police come and they take control of the story, and the police end up speaking to him or her instead of you as the victim. Then they deny responsibility while simultaneously advancing a different type of story about how you're insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then they make promises, more to come. I'll tell you even more about this. And then, so that slows you down while they gain a little bit of momentum to get the story even clearer. So they will tell you that there's more to come to prove their story, but they postpone it. And then they select a detractor or somebody else to start attacking to project the story onto somebody else and project blame and or even just create a new story. We call it spin.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, no matter what's happened, they just declare victory.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the 5 steps of what I understand is called gaslighting. And that's probably something you're going to hear more and more about. So what we are going to do is take a moment to go to break. We're
Let
talking
you guys
about
digest
transparency.
All
yeah,
this
no, I know. We're talking a lot of heavy stuff. But
yeah, this is Noreen and I. You know, again, this just topic kept coming. It kept coming up. And so we really just wanted to keep having the discussion to help ourselves better understand it.
Better digest what's going on instead of reacting to it all the time. We'll be right back. This is Defy and Hustle.
Good evening. If you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike 34-minute ride from the state line up to Route 7, and the northbound Merritt Parkway, it's going to take you about a half hour to get from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk on the Merritt. You can change the world for a child in extreme poverty through Compassion International. Just text CHILD to 83393 to find out how. I'm Jay Trelase, 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Off and on rain showers, some fog and drizzle tonight, lows in the upper 40s. Tomorrow remaining mostly cloudy. Midday highs near 70, then falling temperatures with a few showers or thunder showers in the afternoon. Friday, rain showers, cooler, highs 55 to 60. 10 replacement windows, only $39.95. Installed at J.D. Power Rank number 1 Window World. Call 1-855-WINDOW-5 for a free estimate. I'm meteorologist Ryan Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
What if I told you I could change your life in just 100 days? This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over 2 decades, I worked as a CFO and leader in Wall Street's fast-paced private equity industry. I helped guide teams of professionals to improve their careers, grow their businesses, and still maintain work-life balance. Based on this know-how and my unique understanding of life's principles, I created a 100-day plan that will unquestionably up-level your life. Make 2019 your year. You can and deserve to have it all. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenErlich.com or calling me at 475-333-2173.
Good evening. If you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike 34-minute ride from the state line up to Route 7, and the northbound Merritt Parkway, it's going to take you about a half hour to get from the state line up to Route 7 in Norwalk on the Merritt. You can change the world for a child in extreme poverty through Compassion International. Just text CHILD to 83393 to find out how. I'm Jay Trelase, 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Occasional rain showers for tonight, some fog and drizzle diminishing towards morning, lows 45 to 50, remaining mostly cloudy, milder tomorrow, midday highs near 70, then falling temperatures in the afternoon with a few showers or thunder showers moving through. Tomorrow night, a few showers, the low near 45, rain showers, highs in the upper 50s Friday, and Saturday, considerable clouds with afternoon showers 65 to 70. I'm meteorologist Brian Gallagher on 1490 WGCH.
Are you a business owner who's suffering from what I call the entrepreneur's dilemma? That means you have a successful business, but you're so caught up in operations that you are overwhelmed, maybe you're capital constrained, or you just know that you can scale your business to another level, but you need help doing that. This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defiant Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and CPA in Wall Street's fast-paced real estate private equity industry, where I helped start up and turn around hundreds of underperforming businesses. Based on this know-how, I created a 100-day plan that I tailor to your business to make sure that you streamline operations, drive performance, and generate profits fast. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at NoreenErlich.com or by calling me at 475-333-2173.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Defiant Hustle Radio. I'm Noreen Ehrlich.
I'm Kelly Trepanier. Hey, guys.
And we got Josh at the controls. And for those of you that I hope were listening before we went to break, today Kelly and I are taking on a little bit of a tough topic, but something that we think we wanted to talk about because so much of the news out there is so fear-based. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it doesn't get to the surface of a systemic problem, which is we are in the age of transparency. It can be very turbulent for us, but we have to look at the do our best to stay focused on the bigger outcome, the best outcome, which I do think is us realizing that our institutions have become toxic for us and that we can take our power back. And that's probably, that's the way we're going to go here on.
Yeah. And so now that's kind of where we've come to. We've asked some of the questions of like, well, why does it take so long? How come people don't speak up? And something you said too earlier is like a lot of times too, people just give really glib remarks and kind of brush things off. And if you've been abused and you kind of begin to share with someone, sometimes they're like, well, what were you wearing? And why did you put yourself in that position? And it's like, well, what did you do wrong? And so we really had this kind of culture of shaming and even in the healthcare. So, we're talking about all these different institutions, even the healthcare practitioners, like doctors are like, well, you didn't do the exercise right, or like, what did you do wrong at home?
They blame you.
And it's just like, excuse me.
right. So what we wanted to do, we played a clip in the first part of the show about the Vatican. And so what we're going to do now is talk about men who are also sexually abused and some of what they're facing. We're going to take you into the story. He's doing a TEDx talk, but he's a pastor, and his name is Pastor Seth Shelley. And let's go ahead and listen to his clip about male sexual violence.
But the reality is that sexual violence against males is not uncommon. The current stats reflect that about 1 in 6 males will experience some form of sexual violence at some point in their life. And the actual number might be very different, given the stigma behind reporting sexual violence. A stigma, a narrative, a misconception. And so I see in my own experience a reflection of a greater issue in our society. Narratives. Broad, sweeping narratives replacing our own individual stories, replacing our identities. There's a pressure to accept what our community says is true about us. The family we come from, the place where we grow up. And when we give in to that pressure, we rob from our communities the ability to listen to one another.
Okay, so that was Pastor Seth Shelley talking about his abuse as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And how we can say you can speak up and tell somebody. And even if you do tell somebody, it may go nowhere because we are programmed to stay safe. I'm going to interpret it this way. We're programmed to keep ourselves safe and to keep up good face, mm-hmm. and to wear certain masks. And anything that starts to emerge that might threaten our safety is something that we individually repress and culturally repress. So mm-hmm. he's talking about narratives in our culture, Kelly, that we keep perpetuating around how happy we are in the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, and there's so many. It's funny because I was actually just thinking about this subject even a couple days ago, and I love that word narrative. And, you know, the stories we tell ourselves, they shape our character. They shape our very life. They shape the actions that we begin to take. And when we really do see that our society also has these narratives, and for a long time, you know, it's like women had their rightful place in the kitchen. You know,
right.
It's like narratives are changing. But for me, too, I think listening to that, and as we're specifically on this subject of sexual abuse, and I do love that he really is talking about male abuse and something that I think is even more taboo in that narrative around men. Like, you have to be so tough. Guys don't cry. Like, if you're a man, how could you have had that happen to you, in a sense? And so there's even less of a community to come out and speak to. But even as a woman, it's just these narratives. When those attacks happen on your person, it comes with such shame and guilt. And it just, it's almost like when those emotions are in your body, you don't even have the deservedness,
worthiness
to tell someone. It's like you don't even deserve to get the help. So, you know, it's a long pathway out. And I think it's important that we're looking at those narratives, because if we can change society's narrative and make these safe places and understand our vulnerability and that it is such a courage and a strength, then it's going to allow kids, children, adults, individuals to have a platform and an arena to like come into. So I don't know if I fully spoke to what he was talking about, but that was definitely my take and kind of like interpretation with it.
Well, if you watch this TED talk that Pastor Seth Shelley is giving, he talks about how he was brought up in more of a country town and men were taught to be men,
mm-hmm.
and men were strong, and that he had not even fully appreciated what happened to him, because it happened to him young, so young that he didn't even understand sexuality.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a neighbor came over to his house and she told a story about how she had been sexually abused. And after she left, the people that remained at his home started to talk about how her life was going to be ruined and she should probably keep it quiet. And then she was going to never be in a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's digesting the story of what happened to him now,
mm-hmm.
as sexual abuse, as something that's going to destroy his life. And it's something that should never get told.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of the fact that he and his family and his people in his community are taught in this more, I don't know if he's from Texas, but it's something more a very old school masculine,
right. Yeah.
That men are men and they should keep up good,
mm-hmm.
face.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we listen? I like Seth Shelley because he talks about something that our culture keeps us in, a culture of manipulation. So let's hear the next clip, Josh.
I grew tired of being told who I was, of who I was destined to become, of feeling this pressure to not embrace and acknowledge my pain. Call it foresight, call it divine intervention, whatever it was, I decided that I needed to take control of my life, and I discovered that in sharing my story. Working with youth, I have seen firsthand the powerful misconceptions that surround young people, especially young people that grow up with fewer privileges. So often, their identity is simply replaced with their context. Some misconceptions come from the family or community that we grow up in. Some misconceptions come from someone who wishes us harm. Some misconceptions come from someone trying to sell us a product, much like young women believing they need whatever that product is in order to be thin and have self-worth.
Okay, so that was Pastor Seth, Pastor Seth Shelley speaking about identity crisis and conformity within a community. Mm-hmm. But what I really want you to take away from what he's talking about is now this is a man who's out there helping people. He came out and spoke about what happened to him as a child when he was sexually abused, mm-hmm. the impact that had on him, the impact it had while he repressed it for years and years.
I think first, I also having to recognize, wait, this was something that was wrong, was an attack, then had to reframe a narrative that he had learned
right.
and told.
Perfect.
And then come into that healing space of, wait, I need to tell this truth. And this is my authentic story. And I need to share it if I want to help and, you know, change this narrative in society.
Right. So he's that's perfect. That's well said. And then he's taken that authenticity, that standing in his truth of who he is, he put it out there in public and let the pieces fall where they may. And now he can stand at least honestly within himself instead of lying to himself, that denial that we all have in humanity. And because he's not in denial, because he's in alignment with his own individual truth, mm-hmm. he can also stand in that truth as he goes out publicly mm-hmm. and does TED Talks and helps other children
yeah.
to have thriving lives.
And naturally, like, there's going to be people that still will kind of ostracize him, think his life still might be ruined. And this is one of these challenging aspects of coming out. But when people do speak up, and this is something we did see in the Me Too movement, of that within one day there was like 500,000 tweets of not just people in Hollywood and in media, but all over the world. And it was just like, as one person really finds that courage in themselves, it's scary. It really doesn't always work out for them. We have so many of those stories. But once enough keep joining in, it is like the domino effect. We start to feel safer. We see how the public is, that they're getting treated. And we say, you know what? I can stand by my brothers. I can stand by my sisters. And, you know, say that we're okay. You
right.
know, say that I'm
safe
here
places
too.
In our community. So mm-hmm. we have to not repel people who come out with their truth, but really listen to them
yeah.
and get behind them and not turn the other cheek and not stay silent when somebody's doing something that's morally incorrect. Let's just go back, Josh, if you can play the last clip with Seth Shelley, not this one, because he's going to say something. It's very quick, but I like the way he sums everything up.
Great.
I believe to create healthy communities, we need to be healthy people. And we need to provide safe places. Places where we can share, where we can listen. Places where we can embrace our identities, not simply based on circumstance. And so I wish I had the chance to sit down with my grandfather one more time. Because I would love to hear him ask me again, are you a man or a mouse?
Okay, so that's talking to his grandfather who told him that you're either a man or a mouse, and this is what he struggled with, mm-hmm. even as he was abused as a child sexually, mm-hmm. and even struggling with that without being abused as a man. That's a tough role to live into. Are you a man or a mouse?
I would say that grandfather is still that demonstration of these old narratives, and that, like, you can't be either or. You know, it's like if you're a mouse, then you're vulnerable and you're not a man. And our new paradigm shift and the new narrative that we're all beginning to recognize is that, And anyone that has had the joy and honor to and the strength to find their own vulnerability and speak from that place knows how much courage that takes. And when you even see someone on a TED Talk or this pastor sharing their stories, we can see that they're being vulnerable. And the only experience that anyone's getting in the audience is how much strength and just what a tremendous, yeah, again, just the courage they have, which actually brings me to Brené Brown, who is an author. She's a researcher.
Daring Greatly, which was a blockbuster.
So she researches a lot of human connection. She deals a lot with shame and vulnerability. And I was listening to part of her talk, and I had never known this about the word courage, but in Latin, cor means heart. And the original definition of courage was to tell your whole story with your heart. It's to recognize that we are imperfect, but when you own that courage, that like when you just own your imperfections, yeah, this happened to me, but it's okay. And that we begin telling these stories, we start to change society, and that we do need a lot more of this strength. But again, yes, whistleblowers, yes, we're seeing this change in the infrastructure of society, but also that for all of us, that we can create a new safe space so that people can keep coming out and that we can have a discussion about it rather than right. just
instead
like,
of repressing
rather
it,
than yeah, numbing it out,
in
repressing
denial.
It.
Yeah. So at the conclusion that Kelly and I will come to is, Brené Brown does have a Netflix special on called The Call to Courage. I'm familiar with her. I didn't see the special, but I did hear Ryan Seacrest talking about it when I was away this weekend, and he said he was in tears and laughing. So it is about we're going through a transition from a very fear-based culture and society into a truth-based, knowing where we stand, knowing our own strength. And as we go through this transition, we are going to feel vulnerable, but until we have practice, mm-hmm. regular practice, standing in our truth and seeing that we're still safe, then we're going to be stuck. And
yeah.
so,
but it didn't even like lead to more. So one of the things that Brené Brown was even talking to is that she had discovered these wholehearted people that were like happy and well-rounded and demonstrating resilience, and found that at the core of their darker emotions, their shame, their fear, it was when they found vulnerability to own these things and speak to them with self-acceptance and authenticity, that's the changing point. And those, like, the happiest people on this earth are the most vulnerable and just like true with themselves
and standing in their truth. And they probably wouldn't be vulnerable anymore when the rest of society starts to come around and stand in theirs. So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope it was something a little bit healing in light of everything that's going on in the news, mm-hmm. and that it gives you a different perspective on what's going on for us, that there's a lot of positivity in us if we do the work, folks. So this is Noreen.
This is Kelly.
And Josh over there. And we are signing off from Defiant Hustle Radio. Have a great week.
Tune in next week.
Tune in next week. Bye-bye.